Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 35, Rampage of the Mountain Man, narrated by Terrence Aislefort, with performances by James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Drew Kopis, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Sheeran, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, Nick DePinto, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Joe Brack, MJ Casey, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, Alexander Strain, Terrence Aislefort, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Kimberly Gilbert, Dylan Lynch, and Bradley Smith.
Gray veils of rain hung down from ominous black clouds that crowded the hills. Though it had not yet reached him, the storm was moving quickly, and Smoke Jensen took a poncho from his saddlebag and slipped it on to be prepared for the impending downpour. Smoke was on his way to Denver, and he was butt sore from riding. Looking to hunker down from the approaching storm, he saw the little town of Willow Creek rising before him. The town had no more than a half a dozen commercial buildings and about three dozen houses. Smoke leaned forward and patted his horse on the neck.
What do you say that we find us a place to ride this storm out? A livery for you and maybe supper and a beer for me.
The first few drops of rain had just started when Smoke rode in through the big open door of the Jim Bob Corral.
You want to board your horse here, mister?
Yeah, find a dry place for him. Rub him down and give him oats.
How long?
Just tonight.
Smoke handed the boy a dollar.
Then it's only a quarter. I'll get your change.
You keep the change. Just take extra care of my horse.
Mister, the folks staying over to the Dunn Hotel won't be getting no better treatment than this here horse.
I appreciate that.
Smoke looked across the street at the saloon.
Do they serve food in the saloon?
Yes, sir. It's good food, too. My ma cooks there.
Then I know I'll enjoy it.
For a town so small, the saloon was surprisingly full. More than half the patrons in the saloon turned to look at him, and as they realized he was not a local, even more turned to see who the stranger was in their midst. The barkeep moved toward him when Smoke stepped up to the bar.
Hope you ain't put out none by everyone looking at you. We don't get a lot of visitors here, especially on a night like this.
A night like this is what drove me here.
Yes, sir. I see what you mean. What's your pleasure?
Like a beer.
Yes, sir. One beer coming up.
After a full day of riding, the beer tasted very good to him, and he took a deep drink before he turned his back to the bar to have a look around the place that called itself the Gilded Lily. Smoke's peripheral vision caught someone coming in through the back door, and turning, he saw a tall, broad-shouldered man wearing a badge. Because he had just come in from the rain, water was dripping from the lawman's sweeping mustache.
I'm looking for a man named Emerson Pardeen.
One of the card players stood up slowly, then turned to face the man with the badge.
I'm Emerson Pardeen. Who the hell are you?
The name is Buck Wheeler. Marshal Buck Wheeler.
Oh, yeah? Well, what do you want with me?
I'm taking you back to Dodge City to stand trial for the murder of Jason Tibbs.
Dodge City is in Kansas. This is Colorado. You got no jurisdiction here.
Maybe I should have told you I'm a United States Marshal. I've got jurisdiction everywhere.
Yeah? Well, Mr. United States Marshal Buck Wheeler, I ain't going back to Dodge City with you.
Oh, you're going back all right. Either sitting in your saddle or belly down over it.
The Marshal pulled his gun and pointed it at Pardeen.
Now shuck out of that gun belt, slow and easy like.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe I'm just gonna call you on this one.
Whatever you say, Pardeen. Whatever you say.
The sound caused Smoke to look up toward the top of the stairs. When he did so, he saw a man standing there, aiming a shotgun at the back of the marshal.
Marshal, there's a gun at your back!
Concurrent with Smoke's warning, the man wielding the shotgun turned it toward Smoke. Smoke dropped his beer and pulled his pistol. The wielder of the shotgun lay at the foot of the stairs, his head on the floor, his legs splayed apart, stretching back up the bottom four steps. His sightless eyes were open and staring up at the ceiling. The sound of the two gunshots had riveted everyone's attention on that exchange, and while their attention was diverted from him, Pardeen took the opportunity to go for his own gun. Pardeen's bullet struck the marshal in the forehead. Pardeen then swung his pistol towards Smoke.
Mister, this isn't my fight. We can end it here and now.
Smoke put his pistol back in its holster.
Oh, it's gonna end all right, cause I'm gonna end it right now.
Smoke grew quicker than a snake strike.
How the hell did you do that?
What's going on in here? It's all the shooting.
When Smoke turned toward the sound of the voice, he saw a man dripping water onto the floor as he stood just inside the open door. Because the man was standing in the shadows, Smoke couldn't quite make out his features.
Step into the light so I can see you.
Mister, do you know who you're talking to?
Doesn't much matter who I'm talking to. In about 1 second, you'll be dead if you don't step into the light.
This time, the man moved as ordered. Doing so enabled Smoke to see the badge on the man's shirt, and he let the hammer down on his pistol, then dropped it back into his holster.
Sorry, Sheriff. I didn't know you were the law.
What happened here?
I'll tell you what happened. Who are you?
My name is Corbett.
Corbett pointed to Smoke.
And this here fella just killed 3 men. He killed the marshal, Eddie Phillips, and Emerson Pardeen.
Now you tell me, Corbett, just why would this fella kill the marshal and Pardeen? Marshal Wheeler stopped by my office not 10 minutes ago to tell me he was here to arrest Pardeen. So I know it isn't very likely that Marshal Wheeler and Pardeen would be on the same side in this fracas.
Hell, Sheriff, I don't know why he done it. Maybe you need to ask him.
All right, I'll ask him. Did you kill all 3 of these men, mister?
No, I only killed 2 of them.
I see. You just killed 2 of them. So that makes you, what, 1/3 innocent?
100% innocent. I only kill the ones who are trying to kill me. And in my book, that's self-defense.
He's lying, Sheriff. He killed Phillips and Pardeen in cold blood.
Oh, so now you're saying he only killed 2 of them?
In cold blood, yeah.
Corbett is the one who's lying, Sheriff. This fellow's telling the truth. Eddie Phillips shot first. He was standing up there at the head of the stairs, holding a scattergun pointed at the marshal's back. This fellow shouted a warning to the marshal, and Phillips turned the gun on him. Take a look at the bar here, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Hell, it was a wonder I wasn't killed my own self. Then Pardeen killed Marshal Wheeler and swung his gun around toward this fella, telling me he was fixing to kill him too. What happened next, you ain't gonna believe.
Try me.
Well, sir, this here fella had already put his gun away. Pardeen had the drop on him and was pulling back the hammer when this fellow drew and shot him. Damnedest thing I ever seen.
Is what he's saying true?
It was like the barkeep said. Pardeen was about to shoot me.
Pardeen wasn't about to shoot him. He was just going to hold him for killing Phillips and that marshal.
Hold him?
Yeah. Pardeen was going to hold him until you got here. And tell you what, Sheriff, you arrest him, I'll testify against him at his trial.
Corbett, I'm not aware that there's any paper out on you, but that might be because I haven't looked hard enough.
You ain't gonna find any paper on me, Sheriff. The one you should arrest is this fella.
The sheriff looked around the saloon at the other patrons who were still watching the drama.
Anyone in here back up what Corbett's saying?
I seen it the same way the bartender told it.
Several other patrons nodded their heads in agreement.
So what I'm hearing is nobody backs up Corbett's version of the story.
Everyone was quiet, and the sheriff looked at Corbett.
Looks like a clear case of self-defense to me.
Pardeen was my friend, and I don't like the way you shot him down like that. Maybe I'll just settle the score myself.
No. There's been enough killing for one night.
So what's your name, mister?
Jensen. Kirby Jensen. But most folks just call me Smoke.
Smoke Jensen? Yeah, no wonder he can do what he done. Ain't nobody nowhere no faster than Smoke Jensen.
Are you the Smoke Jensen from over by Big Rock? That Smoke Jensen?
I have a ranch just outside Big Rock, yes.
I'll be damned. What are you doing in Willow Creek?
I'm just passing through on my way to Denver.
The sheriff looked over at Corbett, who had also recognized the name.
Corbett, you still want to settle accounts with this fella?
No, Sheriff, it's like you said, there's been enough killing for one night. But I think you ought to know that Pardeen, he's got a brother named Quince. and he ain't going to like it that you killed Emerson. And one of these days, you and him, you're going to run across each other. And when you two do run into each other, well, I would like to be there to see it.
That wouldn't be a threat now, would it, Corbett?
No, no threat, no. It's just a friendly warning, so to speak.
There ain't nothing about you friendly. If I was you, Corbett, I'd leave town right now.
In case you ain't noticed, Sheriff, there's a storm going on out there.
I'm going back to my office and look for a dodger on you. And if I can't find one, I may just come back and arrest you anyway.
Corbett glared at Smoke and at the sheriff for a moment longer. Then he picked up his hat and started toward the door.
I'll be going now.
Wait, what about your pards?
What about them?
You just gonna walk out and leave them laying there? Aren't you gonna wait until the Undertaker comes so you can make burial arrangements?
Hell, they ain't either one of them my kin. And that means they ain't my responsibility. Just put them anywhere.
I see. Friendship don't mean that much to you, does it?
They was my friends when they was alive. Now they're dead.
You planning on staying in town for long, Mr. Jensen?
The name's Smoke, Sheriff. I only plan to stay the night. Just long enough to ride out the storm. But I reckon I can stay a bit longer if you think that's necessary.
No, there are enough witnesses here to verify what happened. I see no need for getting a judge to come this far just for an inquest that we know how it's going to turn out.
If you do need me for anything, just get in touch with Sheriff Carson and Big Rock.
I'm sure there won't be a need for that. Oh, but Smoke, there's one thing Corbett said that you should take to heart.
Yeah, what's that?
Quince Pardine. You know him?
I've heard his name, but I can't say that I know him.
He's good with a gun, but that ain't the thing that makes him so dangerous. What makes him dangerous is the fact that he is a killer, and he don't particularly care how he kills. You look out for him.
I will, Sheriff, and thanks for the warning.
Denver wasn't the largest city Smoke had ever seen, but it was the largest city in Colorado, and as Smoke rode down Wincoop Street, he had to maneuver his horse from side to side in order to negotiate his way through the heavy traffic of coaches, carriages, and wagons. There was a large banner stretched across the street. Looking up, Smoke smiled when he saw the name on it.
Let's see, Colorado honors Matt Jensen.
This was a proud moment for Smoke, having Matt honored by the state of Colorado. As a young boy, Matt Cavanaugh had run away from an orphanage and would have died had Smoke not found him shivering in a snowbank in the mountains. Smoke took him to his cabin and nursed him back to health. It had been Smoke's intention to keep the boy around only until he'd recovered, but Matt wound up staying with Smoke until he reached manhood. During the time Matt lived with Smoke, he became Smoke's student, learning everything from Smoke that Smoke had learned from Preacher many years earlier, including the most important lesson of all, how to be a man of honor. By the time Matt reached the age of 18, he was skilled in everything from the use of weapons to fighting to tracking, hunting, and camping. Feeling that the time was right, he left to go on his own. Smoke didn't have the slightest hesitancy over letting him leave, because Matt had become one of the most capable young men Smoke had ever seen. Just before Matt left, he surprised Smoke by asking permission to take Smoke's last name as his own. Smoke was not only honored by the request, he was touched. And to this day, there was a bond between them that was as close as any familial bond could be. Smoke and Matt had shared their time together long before Smoke married Sally, and long before his two most loyal hands, Pearly and Cal, had come to work at Sugarloaf. But Sally understood the bond between Smoke and Matt, and it was she who suggested that Smoke go to Denver for the ceremony. After attending the ceremony, in which Matt was honored for bravery and valor by the state of Colorado for saving a train full of passengers from inevitable derailment, Smoke had breakfast with Matt, then said his goodbyes, wanting to return to the Sugarloaf as soon as possible. As he reached the outskirts of Denver, he had to stop at the railroad tracks to wait for a train to pass. He sat in his saddle and watched the windows slide by, nodding at a couple of the passengers who had nodded at him. One of the passengers on the train was Trent Williams, and though Williams did not acknowledge the cowboy who sat on his horse alongside the track, he did see him. Then, just after they passed the cowboy, Williams felt the train start to slow. Williams took an envelope from his inside jacket pocket, pulled a well-read letter from it, unfolded it, and read it again.
Dear Mr. Williams, your offer to buy 51% of the Miners Bank and Trust has been received, and our board asks that you come to Denver to present your proposal in person. We are in agreement that we would like to have you run our bank, but there is some concern as to whether we should turn over absolute control to one man, as would be the case if you were to acquire 51% of the stock. We look forward to meeting you and to discuss at length the details of the sale. Please advise us when you will arrive. I will meet you at the depot to take you to the bank where the board meeting will take place. In order that you may recognize me, I will be wearing a red feather in the band of my hat. Sincerely, Vernon Bess.
Williams put the letter away as the train came to a halt. When he stepped out onto the platform, he saw a man wearing a hat with a red feather in the band.
Mr. Bess?
Yes. You are Mr. Williams, I presume.
I am.
I have a carriage here. The board meeting will be held at 10 o'clock this morning. Do you have luggage?
I do, yes.
Bess made a motion toward the driver of the carriage, and the driver went to retrieve Williams' luggage.
I think you will have no trouble with the board. As president of the Bank of Salcedo in Wyoming, you have just the kind of experience that can make a success of our bank. Although I must say at first the board members were a little put off by your insistence on owning 51%. Well, I think you will have to explain why you feel that is necessary.
It is absolutely necessary if I'm going to make a success of the bank.
I'm sure you will be able to make your case satisfactorily.
The board, which was made up of investors and businessmen from Denver, had gathered at the bank for the meeting, and they greeted Vernon Bess when he arrived.
Gentlemen of the board, it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Trent Williams. As you know, Mr. Williams is president of the Bank of Salcedo. Now, I have done research on that bank and find that it is one of the most successful and fiscally sound banks in all of Wyoming. I believe him to be just the man we are looking for.
Williams acknowledged the introduction and spoke to the board for a few minutes about his plans for the bank.
Are there any questions?
Mr. Williams, why do you insist on buying 51% of our bank?
If I'm going to make this bank successful, I must have total freedom of operation. With 51%, I will not have to be bound by any restrictions placed on me by the board.
So what you are saying is that you want to make us irrelevant?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way. I will, of course, be open to any suggestions the board might have.
I don't know if I can go along with that. After all, I have a lot of money invested in this bank. What if you are wrong and the bank fails?
I will have a lot more money invested than you. That means I have more incentive than you to make the bank succeed.
Elmer, think about it. He's not going to invest $50,000, then let the bank fail.
I agree. If Mr. Williams needs freedom of action to save the bank, I say let's give it to him. God knows we haven't been doing very well ourselves, and this way we'll be able to recoup some of our money while still maintaining an investment. If he succeeds in making the bank successful, we will congratulate ourselves for having made such a sound decision.
All right, I just wanted to ask the question, that's all. How soon can we expect the $50,000?
I will have to return to Salcedo and put my affairs in order there. It would not be fair to my employers to leave without giving adequate notice.
An honorable thing for you to do. All the more reason I believe we should accept the proposal. I now call for a vote.
The board voted to accept the proposal, with even Elmer voting aye. Williams accepted the congratulations of the board, then left the bank to walk down to the hotel. Before getting a room at the hotel, he stopped at the Western Union office to send a telegram.
Understand you have need for cattle. Stop. Please advise me of best price per head. Stop. Reply Trent Williams, Salcedo, Wyoming Territory. Stop.
Smoke had been home for 2 weeks when he was awakened one morning by the aroma of breakfast cooking. When he got dressed and went into the kitchen, he saw that Sally was preparing a veritable feast. Eggs, bacon, biscuits, gravy, and fresh-baked bear claws. Pearlie and Cal were already in the dining room, drinking coffee and looking on hungrily.
You boys are up early.
Well, how could I sleep with Pearlie's stomach growling so?
Oh, was your stomach growling, Pearlie?
How could it not be? There I was sleeping out there in a bunkhouse, all peaceful-like, when all of a sudden I started smelling the most wonderful smells. Doggone right my stomach started growling.
So me and Pearly come in here and see Miss Sally just a-cooking away.
So Miss Sally, ain't it about ready? All them smells got me so hungry I can't hardly stand it.
Pearly, I swear, your grammar is so atrocious that it makes me cringe.
Well, yes'm. I mean, being as you was a schoolmarm and all, before you and Smoke married up, well, I reckon it'd only be natural that you wouldn't think I talk all that good.
Oh, Smoke! Shoot him! Shoot him right now before he says another word.
No, ma'am. Leastwise, not till I ate some of this here breakfast.
Oh, you are incorrigible.
Yes, ma'am. I reckon I am. I'm hungry, too.
Go sit at the table, all of you. I'll bring it to you.
After the huge breakfast, when Smoke finished his coffee, Sally jumped up from the table and refilled his cup.
You're being awfully nice, Sally.
Can't I be nice to my husband if I feel like it?
You get no arguments from me.
I swear, Miss Sally, if this ain't about the best breakfast I ever done at anywhere.
It's come to my mind, Pearly, that anything you eat is the best thing you ever ate.
Well, yeah, I do like to eat. There ain't no denying that. But this here breakfast is particular good.
I have to agree with you on that. Why the big feed, Miss Sally?
No particular reason. Another bear claw, darling.
What is it, Sally? What's going on?
What makes you think something's going on?
Because I know you, Sally Jensen. We're married, remember?
All right, I'll tell you. Do you remember the big winter freeze we had a couple of years ago? We lost over 80% of our herd. Do you remember that?
Of course I remember that. We not only lost our herd, we almost lost Sugarloaf.
Sally reached back to the sideboard and got a small book, which she slid across the table to Smoke.
What's that?
It's the Farmer's Almanac. According to the almanac, this winter is going to be as bad as that one was.
Oh, that's bad. That's really bad.
And that's why the big breakfast? We're celebrating the fact that we're going to have another bad winter?
No. We are celebrating the fact that a bad winter isn't going to be as big a problem for us this year.
What makes you think it won't be a problem?
After that last freeze, you built shelter areas, remember?
Of course I remember. But we can only shelter about half of our herd.
That's all we'll need to shelter.
Sally, it won't put Sugarloaf in danger like the last freeze-up. But do you have any idea how much money it would cost us to lose 3,000 head?
Just over $100,000.
What?
It would cost us just over $100,000 to lose 3,000 head. But we won't lose them if we sell them.
You might be right. But if everyone is in the same situation, we won't be able to sell them.
I know where we can sell them.
Where?
We can sell them to Mr. Colin Abernathy.
I don't know anyone named Colin Abernathy. He's not a local rancher. Is he an absentee owner?
Mr. Abernathy is the Indian agent for all the Cheyenne and Wyoming territory. He needs the beef to get the Indians through the winter.
Wait a minute. Did you say all the Cheyenne and Wyoming?
Yes, and to be honest, that is the fly in the ointment. Mr. Abernathy will only pay for them when they are delivered to the procurement center. That means we'll have to drive 3,000 head to Sorrento, where we can deliver them to Cephas Malone.
I thought you said Colin Abernathy. Who's Cephas Malone?
Malone works for Abernathy.
I see. And where is Sorrento?
It's in Wyoming territory, near the town of Laramie.
Whoa, that's almost 500 miles. You're proposing that we drive 3,000 head, 500 miles? Sally, darling, I know you mean well, but think about it. It would take us a month to get there. And you say this is just a fly in the ointment. That's a pretty big fly, don't you think?
It is, I suppose. But when you think about it, we will have a pretty big fly swat.
What do you mean we'll have a pretty big fly swat?
Mr. Abernathy is paying $35 a head at delivery.
$35 a head? Why...
That's $105,000.
Pearly dropped his fork and stared across the table at Sally.
Pearly, that's the first time I ever seen anything stop you eating in mid-chew.
Well, Miss Sally, did you just say $105,000?
I did say that. That's why I was able to answer your question as to how much it would cost us to lose 3,000 head.
Lord, I've never seen that much money. I ain't never even heard of that much money.
You haven't said anything, Smoke. What's the matter? Has the cat got your tongue?
That's a lot of money. And you're right. That is one big fly swat. Something like that would be worth going all the way to Sorrento.
Smoke, you really think we can drive that many cows all the way to Sorrento?
Looks like we don't have any choice. The boss has spoken.
Lord, just us?
What's the matter, Cal? Don't you think we can do it?
I reckon so, if you say we can.
Don't worry. We'll get some men to help us. Drovers, blacksmith, cook.
You won't need a cook.
No cook? Miss Sally, you don't aim for us to make a drive like that on nothing but beef jerky, do you?
No. I expect you to make the drive on bacon and beans, biscuits and cornbread, ham and fried potatoes, some roast beef, steak from time to time, apple pie, and maybe a few bear claws.
Lord of mercy. You going with us?
No.
Yes.
Sally, this isn't some picnic in the country. I'm not going to let you go.
Smoke, Jensen. Did you just say what I thought you said? Did you just say you aren't going to let me go? Cal, if you would be so kind as to hitch up the team, I'll take the wagon into town and pick up all the possibles we're going to need for the drive.
Cal looked at Smoke.
We'll do what the lady says. Maybe a few bear claws would taste good out on a trail.
Yes, sir.
I'll help you with the team.
I thought you might see it my way.
I haven't seen it your way.
Oh? Kirby Jensen, are you telling me you're going to stop me from going?
No, hold on. I said I haven't seen it your way. I didn't say you weren't going.
I didn't think you would actually try to stop me.
I won't do that. But if there comes a gully gusher, and you're trying to drive the chuck wagon hub deep through water and mud, I don't want to hear the slightest complaint from you.
Why, Smoke darling, do I ever complain?
Even as Pearlie and Cal were hitching up the wagon for Sally to drive into town, several hundred miles north, in the little town of Salcedo in Wyoming Territory, Trent Williams was waking up in a hotel room. He lived in the hotel. As president of the Bank of Salcedo, Williams could afford to live anywhere he wanted, but he preferred a hotel room to a house or an apartment in a boarding house. Life was just simpler living in a hotel. Getting out of bed, Williams padded barefoot over to the window and looked down on the town, which was just beginning to awaken. The morning's enterprise had already begun. Water was being heated behind the laundry, and boxes were being stacked behind the grocery store. A team of four big horses pulled a fully loaded freight wagon down the main street. From somewhere, Williams could smell bacon frying, and his stomach growled, reminding him that he was hungry. He poured some water in the basin, washed his face and hands, then got dressed and went downstairs. There were a couple of people in the lobby, one napping in one of the chairs, the other reading a newspaper. Neither of them paid any attention to Williams as he left the hotel. The morning sun was bright, but not yet hot. The sky was clear and the air was clean, and as he walked toward the cafe, he could hear the sounds of commerce. Several of the town's citizens doffed their hats in respect to Williams as he passed them on the street. Williams nodded in return, but because of his station in the town, he did not doff his own hat. He went into the cafe. Williams took a paper and walked over to his table. Even as he was sitting down, a waiter appeared and poured the coffee for him.
Your usual, Mr. Williams?
Of course, my usual. Bacon, eggs, fried potatoes, biscuits, and gravy. Have I ever varied my order?
No, sir.
Then don't waste my time asking foolish questions. Just get my breakfast out here.
Right away, sir.
Half an hour later, Williams was just finishing his breakfast when a man stepped up to his table. The man needed a shave and a bath. His clothes hung in rags from his body.
You're in my light. Move.
Sorry, Mr. Williams. Didn't mean no offense.
What do you want, Percy?
Well, sir, Mr. Williams, you said I was to bring you a telegram if it come.
That's right.
Well, sir, it's come. It come this morning.
Williams stuck his hand out.
Yes, sir, it come this morning, and I got it first thing and brung it over to you.
Williams reached into his pocket and pulled out a quarter. He gave it to Percy.
Will this compensate you for your trouble?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
The telegram?
Oh, yes, sir. Here it is. You want me to hang around so you can answer it?
No, that won't be necessary.
If you need me to run any more errands for you, I'll be glad to do it, Mr. Williams. Whatever you want. Why, you just let me know and I'll do it for you.
What I want is for you to go away, Percy. You smell and you're disturbing my breakfast.
Yes, sir. But if you need any more errands run, well, you know where I'll be.
Yes, I know where you will be. Like as not, you'll be passed out on the floor of Duffy's saloon.
Well, there's no need for you to talk to me like that. Just because I got no money or no place to live, that don't mean I ain't a person.
Williams opened the envelope without answering, and realizing that Williams was no longer paying any attention to him, Percy turned and walked away. Williams read the telegram.
Per your inquiry, Indian agency does require beef. Stop. Will pay $35 per head payable on delivery to Sorrento. Stop.
Williams folded the telegram and put it away, smiling.
Good news, sir?
Yes, it is very good news.
About the bank?
In a manner of speaking. I suppose you could say that it is about the bank. Although I do have a life other than president of the bank.
Yes, sir, I'm sure that you do. But you are a very conscientious man, Mr. Williams. All the stockholders insist that the bank has prospered because of you. Bank is very fortunate to have you. Indeed, the town of Salcedo is fortunate to have you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jordan. I appreciate that.
More coffee?
No, I'll just finish this cup, then be on my way.
Very good, sir. Just call me if you need anything.
Williams nodded, then took a swallow of his coffee and looked once more at the telegram. Jordan had asked if this news concerned the bank. It did concern the bank, just not this bank. If everything worked out right, and he saw no reason why it would not, he would soon own his own bank. When Williams read in the paper that all the Indians had been ordered onto reservations, he realized that feeding them would become the responsibility of the U.S. government. He also realized that that would require a lot of beef, and the moment he realized that, he knew that he had found a way to pay for the bank he wanted to buy. All someone had to do, in order to make a lot of money, was to be in position to make that beef available to the U.S. government. Williams was not a rancher, but that didn't mean he couldn't come up with enough cattle to negotiate a profitable deal with the U.S. government. Last month, he had bought a demand mortgage from the bank. That mortgage, for $1,000, was due 2 weeks from today. Twice before, Jason Adams, owner of Backtrail Ranch, had arranged an extension on his loan. No doubt he would attempt to do so again, but this time it would not be the bank he was dealing with. By buying the note, which was a perfectly legitimate business arrangement, Williams would be able to force Adams to deal directly with him. What made the deal particularly attractive, as far as Williams was concerned, was that he would not have to deal with the board of directors. He could, and he would, make his own arrangements with regard to the note. And those arrangements could be quite lucrative. Williams had Adams over a barrel. If Adams wanted to save his ranch, he was going to have to pay off the note. And the only way he could pay off the note would be by forfeiting his 2,000 head of cattle. Williams did the math. By settling the loan, he would be paying $1,000 for 2,000 head of cattle. That came out to 50 cents a head. He would then sell those same cows at $35 a head. That would be a pure profit of $69,000. That was more than enough to buy the miner's bank. Yes, the arrangements would be quite lucrative indeed. As Williams walked from the restaurant to the bank, he stopped at the barber shop for his weekly tonsorial appointment. The barber, Earl Cook, was sitting in his chair reading the newspaper when Williams walked in. Hopping up quickly, he made a point of brushing out the chair before holding his arm out in invitation.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Williams. Here it is, 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning, and you are here punctual as usual.
I consider punctuality to be the hallmark of any businessman. I only wish the bank customers were as punctual in the payment of their debts.
You will want a shave, I suppose.
Yes.
Cook made lather, then began applying it to Williams' chin.
Jason Adams was in here earlier this morning.
Adams was here? What for?
Why, for a shaven haircut. Wearing a suit he is, and with a fresh shave and a haircut, he's quite dapper looking, if I do say so.
You'd think he would have better things to do with his money.
I expect he'll be dropping in to see you later today. I expect he just wanted to make a good impression.
He could have saved his time and his money. I'm afraid I won't be able to extend his loan any longer. I wish I could do something for him, I truly do. But he's already had two extensions, and I'm running a business.
Oh, I understand. It's just that Jason and his wife, Millie, are such good people. Pillars of the church, always first to volunteer to help someone when help is needed.
Now, Mr. Cook, if I ran the bank with my heart instead of my head, where would we be? You are a stockholder, are you not?
You got me there, Mr. Williams. As I told you, we are very lucky to have a man with your business sense. And you're right, you can't run a bank with your heart.
Well, I must confess I am being disingenuous with you. I, too, have been worried about Jason Adams, so I have done something that I might regret.
Oh, and what is that?
I bought his note from the bank.
You bought Jason's note? Well, why would you do that?
Because in all good conscience, I cannot allow the bank to extend his note any longer. However, as the personal holder of his note, I believe I can work out some way with Mr. Adams that will allow him to keep his ranch. That is, if he's willing to work with me.
You are a good man, Mr. Williams. Yes, sir, you are a good man.
Of course, Jason may not like what I am offering him. It's going to be harsh, but it's the only way he'll be able to save his ranch. And after all, it is better to swallow a bitter pill than to lose the entire ranch.
Well, that's true, all right. Sometimes a fella just has to bite the bullet.
Half an hour later, Williams was in his office in the back of the bank.
Enter.
Adams came in and stood nervously just inside the door. He was, as Cook had described, wearing a suit and was freshly shaved and trimmed. It was obvious that he was going all out to make as positive an appearance as he possibly could.
Good morning, Jason. Please, come in, have a seat. How is Millie?
My wife is fine. Hey, thank you for your concern.
And your two boys? They must be a head taller than they were the last time I saw them.
Oh, yes, sir. They've grown up quite a bit.
Well, I hope everything is fine with you. What brings you to town, Jason? What can I do for you?
I'm here to talk about my loan.
You are a little early, aren't you? Your loan isn't due for a couple of weeks.
Well, you can remember when my loan is due.
Well, when I heard you were in town today, I thought it might have something to do with your loan. I didn't think you would stop by just to pass the time of day.
Oh, no, sir. No. No, sir, I'd never waste your time like that.
So, you want to pay your loan off, do you?
No, sir, I'm afraid I can't do that. I'm gonna have to ask you for another extension.
Oh. Oh, that's too bad. Yes, sir, that is too bad. Is there any chance you'll be able to pay it off by the time it is due?
No, sir. I'm sorry, Mr. Williams, I truly am, but I'm not going to be able to pay the loan off.
Mr. Adams, for your sake and for the sake of your family, I was really hoping that this time you would be able to pay the note off. You see, I'm afraid that it isn't going to be possible to give you another extension.
Not possible? Are you saying you won't extend the note?
I'm really sorry, Mr. Adams. I wish I could extend your loan again, I really do, but my hands are tied. I have an obligation, not only to the stockholders of this bank, but also the depositors.
I see. What's going to happen now?
Well, I'm afraid that you're going to lose your ranch.
No, you can't take the ranch away from me, you can't. That's my home. That's the only place me and Millie's ever lived. Both our kids is born there, please. There must be some other way out of this rather than forcing me to lose my ranch.
I'm sorry. I wish I could help you, but I'm afraid there's nothing I can do. Please try to understand. My hands are tied.
But what am I going to tell Millie?
There is one way. I'm not sure you'll want to go along with it.
What do you mean I won't go along with it if there's any way at all?
After all, I suppose that for you, the most important thing would be to save your ranch, am I right? I mean, it is your home.
Yes. Yes, I'd do anything to save it.
Then I do have an idea. It isn't something that I want to do, but under the circumstances, I'll do it for you. I'll buy the note from the bank. Then you would owe me and not the bank.
And you'd give me an extension?
No, no, don't misunderstand. There is no way I could afford to do something like that. But what I will do is mark the note paid in full in exchange for your cattle.
Oh, my cattle? How many of my cattle?
All of them.
What? No, I couldn't do that. Why, I have 2,000 head. I couldn't possibly let you have 2,000 head of cattle for $1,000.
Consider this, Mr. Adams. The note you signed with the bank was for your ranch and all livestock and improvements. So you are faced with this choice. Let the bank foreclose and lose everything, including your cattle, or settle with me for your cattle and keep your ranch.
I couldn't possibly do that, but I could sell enough of my cattle to pay the note.
No, you can't do that.
What do you mean I can't do that? Of course I can. I don't know why I didn't think of it earlier.
If you sell those cattle, Mr. Adams, you will go to jail.
What are you talking about? Why'd I go to jail?
Remember, your loan note was for the ranch, livestock, and all accoutrements. That means you have your cattle mortgaged, and there's a law against selling mortgaged property.
I didn't know that.
Now you do. So the choice is this, Mr. Adams. Either turn over all your cattle to me in exchange for a release from the debt, or I will be forced to foreclose on your ranch and your cattle.
I suppose when you put it that way, I really have no choice.
Mr. Adams, the truth is, I've gone way out on a limb for you on this. I probably shouldn't have done so, but I've already bought the note. It was the only way I could think of to save your ranch.
I see.
Williams opened the drawer of his desk and pulled out a paper.
We can take care of this right now if you want to. Sign this paper turning your cattle over to me, and I'll release the lien on your ranch.
Williams slid the paper across to Adams, then handed him a pen. Adams held the pen poised over the line for his signature for a moment, but he didn't sign.
What's wrong?
I've got 2 more weeks.
Mr. Adams, you've had 2 years to settle this debt, and you've been unable to do so. What makes you think you can do it in 2 more weeks?
I can't settle in 2 more weeks. But before I do something like this, I need to discuss it with Millie.
I see. And your wife makes all your decisions for you, does she?
No, sir. But we do make them together.
All right, Mr. Adams. Discuss this with your wife if you must. But make certain she understands all the ramifications of it. Because if you don't accept this offer before the 2 weeks are up, the deal will be taken off the table. I'm afraid then that I will be forced to exercise every clause of the loan agreement, and that means, Mr. Adams, that you will not only forfeit your cattle, you will lose your ranch as well.
Yes, sir. I understand. And I appreciate what you're doing for me, Mr. Williams. Really, I do. It's just that I'm going to have to bring my wife around.
Very well. Give her my best.
I will. And thank you again, sir.
As the 2 cowboys dismounted in front of a saddle store, one of them rubbed his behind.
Damn, that's the hardest, most uncomfortable saddle I ever sat in. I'll be glad to get mine back.
Don't know why you brung it in to get repaired anyway. As far as I could see, there wasn't that much wrong with it.
Well, the fender was tore.
Well, hell, it don't hurt nothing to have a tore fender. All the fender does is make a saddle look good. Don't have nothing to do with the way it sits.
Maybe it don't mean nothing to somebody like you. But I'm particular about my saddle. You can ask anyone and they'll tell you that Leroy Buttram is particular about his saddle.
Yeah, if you ask me, you're old maid particular.
And you don't never care what yours is like? I swear, Hank, if I hadn't been around when you was born, I wouldn't even believe you was my brother.
The 2 men stepped up onto the porch, then pushed the door open to go inside. The store smelled of leather, saddle soap, and neat's foot oil. There was one particularly handsome saddle on display.
Looky here! He's got my saddle out here for the whole world to see.
Did he fix the fender?
Leroy put his hand on the piece of leather that was attached to the stirrup strap.
Yep, here it is, as good as new.
The proprietor came up front then, and seeing the 2 cowboys standing by the saddle, nodded at them.
Boys, Mr. Pogue?
Tell me, Mr. Pogue, why you got my saddle out front like this? Probably because it's the prettiest saddle in town, huh?
Well, not exactly. I had it out here to sell it.
To sell it? What the hell you mean you had it out here to sell it? Mister, this here ain't your saddle to sell.
Well, you said you'd pick it up within a week. It's been a month.
Yeah, well, I didn't have the money then, but I'm here to pick it up now.
Well, good. That'll make both of us happy.
Leroy gave Pogue a $5 bill. Pogue just stared at it for a moment.
What's this for?
What do you mean, what is this for? This here's for the work you've done on the saddle.
That'll be $25.
What?
The cost of the repair to your saddle is $25.
The hell you say? Mister, you can get a brand new saddle for $25.
Not like this one.
Well, you didn't make this one and already paid for it once. All you done was put on a new fender.
And I'm charging you $25 for that.
You can charge all you want. I ain't paying it. Just take the damn thing off.
Well, that'd be $10.
$10? What for? I told you just to take it off. I don't want it.
$10 is for the aggravation.
I ain't paying you no $10 for nothing.
Leroy jerked the fancy leatherwork fender off the stirrup strap and tossed it toward Poe.
There, I done the work for you. Come on, Hank, let's go.
Leroy put the saddle up onto his shoulder and started toward the door.
Stop! You're stealing that saddle.
You can't steal what's already yours.
Fortunately, Hank was looking toward Pogue because he saw the saddle shop proprietor hurry toward the counter and reach for a shotgun. Quickly, Hank's pistol was in his hand, pointing toward Pogue.
Don't you try nothing dumb now, Mr. Pogue.
You are stealing that saddle.
We ain't stealing it. As soon as I get $10, I'll come back and pay you, even though I don't think I ought to have to.
Help! Someone, help! I'm being robbed!
Leroy put the saddle down while he started removing the old saddle from the horse he had ridden.
Help! Sheriff! Help!
Will you shut up?
Both men turned and saw one of the deputies standing out in the road, pointing his gun at them.
So what's going on here?
Thank God someone answered my call. These men are stealing this saddle.
I ain't stealing it. This here saddle belongs to me.
You brought it in for repair, and you did not pay for the repair. According to the law, until you pay for the repair, the saddle belongs to me.
I undid the repair.
That doesn't matter. I already did the work.
I think you two boys better come with me.
Come on, deputy. This here's just a misunderstanding, that's all.
Leroy reached for his saddle.
No. No, you need to leave the saddle and come with me, both of you.
That son of a bitch got my saddle!
It isn't your saddle until you have satisfied the debt owed against it.